I'm an addict. My name is Drew.
Hey, Drew.
Damn, I'm nervous. I know most of the people in the room. And I was trying to tell myself, it's just a regular meeting. It's just a regular meeting. But something about standing up here and having this microphone and being at this convention makes it extremely nerve-wracking. And right now, I'd rather be sitting there listening to somebody else speak, no matter who it is or what they're talking about. Yeah. So, my story is very unique. I used drugs and had an issue with myself from an early age. I've never heard that one before. But traditions 10, 11, 12, someone sent me a text asking me if I would share. And I, you know, asked me how much time I had, asked me if I would share. I said yes and told them I had over 5 years clean. And they're like, okay, stand by. And then I got the text saying traditions 10, 11, 12, Saturday afternoon. And at that point, I wanted to be like, I don't know. I don't know if I have enough time or I may not be able to make it to Ocean City, even though, like, I had already had plans to come down here. I don't know. I mean, the first thing that crossed my mind was, you know, I don't have enough experience with those traditions to share, and people don't want to hear me talk, and just the same shit that goes through my head about everyday things. You know, from an early age, I remember just not liking who I was. Don't even really know why. I mean, the first I can remember was probably sometime around when I started school, so kindergarten. I remember going to school and hearing, you know, when they do roll call, and I didn't like my name. You know, and I thought if I had my brother's name, his name is Michael, I thought if my name was Mike, it would be different or better. And that's as early as I can remember, just not being okay with me, you know, and you know, a lot of things happened over the course of my childhood and life and even an active addiction that caused me to act certain ways and build character defects and coping mechanisms. You know, one thing that happened, you know, when I was, I'm guessing I had to be around 9 or 10. We had, my brother, my sister, and I had gone through, I don't know how many babysitters as a kid. I mean, some of them would last a day. Some of them would last weeks. And this one particular babysitter, she was older, and she would take me every now and then to where she stayed. She lived with her boyfriend on this houseboat, and she'd take me there, and I would hang out, and I would go fishing off of the pier. And the last time that I went there, my dad came and picked me up, and about 5 minutes after I left, he shot and killed her. And I was the only witness on the stand for the murder trial. And, you know, I'd seen all the guns that he had, and, you know, it's like nobody else was there. You know, I was the last person to see both of them there and the last person other than him to see her alive. You know, and they showed me pictures of him and the guns, and they made me point him out in the courtroom and whatnot. And I was like, in my mind, it was like, okay, he did it. You know, there was two people there, and one of them died. And he got off, you know, and I remember being extremely nervous in there, and, you know, I didn't like the fact that I had to point somebody out on trial, and I didn't like the fact that, you know, that was my first experience really with having a loss of that nature. And not knowing them, but through some step work and learning about myself and internalizing things, I realized that it taught me a lot of things, you know. Just a few of them were that nobody believes me. You know, it was like I said it happened. So, you know, that my, even at an early age, I was like, I felt like nobody believes me. Doesn't matter what I say, whether it's the truth or not, that I'm helpless, that it doesn't even really matter. Just a lot of things, you know, and it, that's just one thing, you know, over the course of life that happened. And, you know, I remember growing up and I wasn't using drugs as early as my brother and my sister. So this friend of my brother and I, he would come over to pick my brother up, and I'd want to go hang out, so I'd run outside with him. And there, it'd be a four-door car with just my brother and the dude driving. They'd be like, there's not enough room. You know, and they'd take off, and I'd just, you know, walk back in the house. And I wasn't allowed to hang out because my brother thought that I would tell on him for getting high. You know, they were all getting high, and I wasn't included. So when I started using drugs, I was included, you know, and it changed things. I don't think I really cared about friendship, but it was more about being able to hang out and have an identification and being included. You know, no one likes to be left out of stuff, and I didn't use drugs to be accepted. I thought I just was trying them. You know, I didn't know that I was an addict and that I wouldn't be able to stop, and the disease is progressive, and it would just go on and on and on. And the point to all this is that when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, like it says in the literature, you know, I wasn't brimming with honesty, love, and willingness. And I was scared. I didn't like people hugging me. When people welcomed me and said, glad to see you, you know, keep coming back, I didn't believe that they actually genuinely were welcoming me there. You know, I thought they were just doing it because they had to. And, you know, some of them might have been, but it didn't really matter because I believed in my head, you know. So I just kept coming back, you know. Initially, I'm not really sure what it was. I think it was the just feeling a little bit equal, a little bit. You know, I was always better than or less than. And being in meetings, it seemed like when my head would shut up for just a minute that I had a sense of equality and that people accepted me. And I didn't have to use drugs, and I didn't have to be a class clown, and I didn't have to put people down to try to feel better. I just sat and listened, and it helped. You know, I liked going to meetings. I would stay clean just, you know, on that hour, hoping that the next day I'd get to go to another meeting. And, you know, a lot of the things that I learned were in meetings and after meetings at diners. You know, I would get rides. You know, my brother and I, when we got out of jail, we were staying at my mom's house, and you know, we'd get a ride to the meeting, we had to get a ride home. And we, you know, I remember many times we were outside the meeting waiting. You know, neither one of us were, we were too scared to ask for a ride. So, and then I'm like, you ask him. He's like, you ask. And I'm like, you ask, you know. And then finally there's like one dude left, and we both woke up like, oh, ride, you know. And they'd be like, yeah, I'll give you a ride, but you got to come to the diner with me because that's where I'm going, you know. We're going to go fellowship. And after that, I'll get you a ride home. You know, and that's where, you know, I learned what carrying the message is. You know, I didn't know at the time that that's what those people were doing for me. You know, that they were sharing with me their experience, teaching me about what, you know, Narcotics Anonymous is, teaching me some etiquette. And that was basically the beginning of my recovery, was listening. And every now and then, everybody's there talking and everything, so I'd want to say something, so I would share something about active addiction, or I would share about how bad it was for me when I detoxed in jail on a concrete floor with one of those, like, you know, the suicide blankets or whatever they call them. You know, I didn't eat for days. I was puking out of both ends of my body. And that's what I said one time. And they all just looked at me and paused for a second. At first, I thought they were, you know, like, this dude is sick, you know. And then they said, you know, you never have to live like that ever again if you don't want to. And it's the if you don't want to part that I didn't understand, you know. Like, what are they saying? Are they saying that I wanted to live like that? Or, you know, of course I didn't want to have to do the things that I did in active addiction, the ways and means to get more. I didn't want to do those things. Those are the type of things where, like, I said, I'd never be like him, you know. Or I'm definitely not going to use needles, you know. Or I'm not going to do that to get another one. You know, and towards the end, I was asking people for different ways and means. I was, like, running out of stuff, and you know, I started hanging out with people that were doing this particular crime to get money. And, you know, the jobs, the friends, everything starts going. And they weren't working, but they always had money. And I was like, what do you all do? You know, and they told me. So I started doing that. And, you know, in the end, homeless, living in my car. And when I got locked up, I remember telling the police officer that was there, I was like, I was sitting in front of the magistrate, and I was mad, you know, and I said, do you believe in karma? I was like, because you're going to get what's coming to you, you know. And he just looked at me like, this dude is crazy, you know. And in reality, he might have, because he did a very good thing by locking me up. So, you know, he might have had many blessings, you know, because as many as I've had in Narcotics Anonymous, I wish him the best. You know, I don't think I'm going to do an amends to him, but, you know, in the literature it says it usually isn't until we get involved with service that someone points out that personal recovery depends on NA unity. You know, I'd heard that many, many times, the readings, the traditions, and none of it really made any sense. You know, I've read the books many times. I had to do a long-term treatment, and I remember being in there, and I had all my literature because, you know, I had been to meetings, and I was staying clean. And I would carry my book around the treatment center, and I would read, you know, and I would do step work in my spare time. And people would put me down for it and tell me I was programmed and I was better than and I was arrogant and all this other stuff. What? I might have been. But it was like I didn't see why people were treating me like that for trying to do something, you know, for myself. The best thing about it was that I had already been relieved the desire to use at that point, and I was living in the benefits of practicing the NA program. So, like, part of me didn't care what they had to say, you know? I'm like, look, I'm just got to do this treatment thing, get out, and keep doing what I was doing. I really wanted to get back to meetings. They had one NA meeting a week, you know, and sometimes they'd bring in speakers from other fellowships, you know, and at that point, you know, I knew a lot. You know, so I was like, that's against the traditions, you know, and, you know, I'm like beating people up in my head when, like, I'm sitting in a treatment center, you know, I don't know how to live life without the use of drugs, at that point, you know, all I had was my knowledge of what the literature meant to me, you know, and getting into service definitely helped me a lot, you know, group consciences, serving at the area level, I've served at the regional level. And that, to me, I think at the regional level is where it's helped me the most, learning how things happen in Narcotics Anonymous behind the scenes. And I figure you can just let me know when I got about 3 minutes left, and I'll hit up 10, 11, and 12. Because, you know, no, it's tough. It's tough, you know, I'm really good one-on-one, you know, I'm good in meetings, outside meetings. It's hard for me to get up here and recall everything that I have in my head that I want to say. You know, I had a great share on the way down here when I was driving. Dude, it was like Saturday night share, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and then I get up here and I'm like, can I just read the book until the time's up, because I feel like the literature is going to say it better than I can, you know? You know, so it's hard for me to speak in front of a group of people. You know, tradition 10 to me is basically keeping it simple and keeping it safe. You know, Narcotics Anonymous has no opinions on outside issues, hence the NA name will never be drawn into public controversy. You know, I was talking to someone, they were applying for a job, and they'd went in, and they had previous experience at working in the hotel industry, and they also had previous experience of like getting clean and doing great and then going back out and like taking a bunch of stuff from those employers. So he was talking to me about going for a job application, and he went and he came back and he's like, it was great, you know, I told him how well I'm doing in the program and that I'm this and I'm that, and he kept, you know, he was throwing the program in there like he's representing the program to these people, and that's what he was basing his trust on. So, you know, there were people, like, whether they trusted him or not, they were trusting what he was saying that the program has done for him, right? And they gave him the job. And I told him, I was like, I don't really think that's a great idea, you know? You're putting the program in front of yourself, and you're even if you're wearing it or not, you got this big NA, you know, hat and shirt and everything. And when you got a history of messing up, and if you were to mess up again, you're dragging NA's name through the mud. And he's like, no, that's not it, that's not. And I was like, that's exactly what it is. And it's against the traditions. You know, and I didn't want to be like the NA police, you know. But earlier on in my recovery, when I knew everything, I was a ranking officer in the NA police. I have since retired, you know, put my gun down. But I prefer to do it more supportively, maybe in a group conscience, or if someone asks me about a particular situation, then I share my experience with them. But the thing was, I wasn't doing it to, like, tell this guy, you can't do that, you know, or telling him what to do or how to live. I was, like, more worried about NA. You know, what about if someone comes behind him and they're doing good and they don't do it the way he did it, but they do happen to disclose that they're a member, right, and that they're in recovery. They're already shot down, right, because of what this guy has done. That's just one person, one incident. You know, there's millions of people in recovery. And he did just that. He relapsed, embezzled money. And it's, like, unfortunate that takes place. But if it wasn't for learning what I've learned and asking people, learning from other people's experience, then I would do just the same. You know, I would go on and do whatever I can, because I can be self-centered, as you know, just as much as anybody else, and do things to try to better myself at the expense of others or at the expense of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't feel that I've done that since coming here, but who knows? I mean, everything is not, I'm not aware of everything that I do. You know, so that's what I mean. Keep it simple and keep it and safe. The only other thing I can say about that is more so about the 11th tradition was I was an intern at a treatment center, and they wanted me to be like the NA representative for this treatment center, because they were like, it was new, it was up and coming, and they were trying to promote it and, you know, putting signs on the road, like you see political stuff on the side of the road when people are getting elected. They were putting those things up, and they were telling me, you should start a meeting here, and it'll be this and that. I'm just like, uh-uh. I'm like, I'm not going to be a part of that in any way. You know, I'm not going to help you use NA's name to sell this facility, you know. And, you know, it ended up that I stopped working there over that and a couple other things that they were wanting to use me as a tool and use NA as a promotion to try to get people into a treatment center, which happened to be extremely expensive. And my experience has been that NA works. You know, some people go to treatment, some people don't. I did. I feel like there's a lot of people I know that have never been to treatment and live a life worth living based off practicing this, the principles in this program. You know, they say relapse isn't a requirement. I don't believe treatment's a requirement. I was forced to go, so I went. And relapse is a part of my story. I tried for it not to be. You know, I lied for a while. You know, picking up key tags, talking about relapse isn't a part of my story. And then, you know, I tried to bury it because I was the only one that knew, you know. And in the beginning, it worked for me because I was the only one that knew. And then as time went on, people that I knew would come back in from using, and they'd be like, man, it was eating me up, you know, and I just had to get honest. And they'd look right at me, and I'd be like, what are you doing? You know? Like, why are you looking at me? And, you know, the first time, I just, you know, was like, man, that was weird, you know? But then every time, it would seem like every time somebody would share about getting honest about their clean date, they would look at me. And I'd just, oh, my God, you know? And finally it got to a point, you know, like during my 10th step, we're having to take responsibility for myself and my actions and take a look at every day. There was one of these questions that I picked for my 10th step that was, are you hiding anything from yourself or your sponsor? And I just answered no every time, right? And then, like, I was getting toward the end of it, and that, just that one day, it was right there. And it said, are you hiding anything? And I answered yes. And I knew once I wrote it down, it was over. You know, I was going to have to do something about it. And it got to a point where I was going to use to try to bury the fact that I'd been lying about my clean date, right? The disease told me after a meeting, I was sitting in my truck And it was like, well, if you go out and use, because I had been having cravings, which addicts, you know, that happens. I'd been having cravings, and the disease said, well, if you go use, you can reset your clean date and never tell anyone. Right? Because I'll then have a new clean date, and I can own that clean date. I'll have no choice but to. The fallacy is that I was going to go use once and make it back. Right? So that's just one part of it. The other part was I played the whole tape, and I realized that if, let's say I did it, I go, I use, I do make it back, and I'm like, whew, man, good thing I made it back. Then I realized that that is going to haunt me the whole time. I'll still have to get honest about that, because the whole base of my relapse would have been based on a lie that I'm bearing. And as I said, I was like, man, it was such a moment of clarity, and I was like, that would have been bad. You know, and I picked up the phone, I called my sponsor, and I told him, and, you know, he's like, well, you got to go to a meeting, share about it, pick up a white key tag for the one you never picked up that you should have. And my home group was the next day. I went in, and normally it's like, it's a men's step group, and it's normally, you know, small and intimate. Well, somebody was celebrating, right? There had everybody, man. It was standing room only, and I'm like, I'll pick a different meeting, you know. I'll go outside the area and just be like, hey, guys, been lying. Nice to see you, you know. And, you know, I realize, I'm like, man, if I'm coming clean, I just got to do it and not worry about it, you know. The freedom that I got out of it far outweighed the uncomfortability of doing it at the time. But it seems like the world is ending, you know, when I get back into a corner like that. And, yeah, it was like, the type of thing where, like, oh, it doesn't bother me, you know, it's not bothering me, until I let it go and realize how much it had been bothering me, you know, how much it had been weighing me down. So I don't know why I wanted to say that, but there's probably some people in the room that didn't know that, but that is the case. And Tradition 11, our public relations policy, based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. You know, 10 and 11 were part of that thing at the treatment center. You know, just not even so much that, but just like I'd see people from active addiction, and I want to say, hey, you know, come to NA. It, you know, this, that, and the other, and I don't. You know, they're just like, man, you look good. What are you doing? And my brother and I ran into this guy a couple years ago, the guy that, you know, at the time, even in active addiction and getting in early recovery, I thought he was a true friend, you know, like someone that I would trust. And I saw him, and he didn't look so great. And he said, man, you guys look good. How are you doing? I'm like, man, we've been clean at the time. I think we've been clean for like 3 years. He's like, nothing for 3 years? I was like, nothing. He goes, whew. He's like, at least you can drink. Good God. He's like, there's no way I could do that. You know, we're like, nothing. Nothing. Not a drop of alcohol. Nothing at all. You know, and I was like, to us, alcohol is a drug. You know, and he looked kind of confused. And, you know, it's just, it's definitely a miracle. You know, I didn't believe I would ever be able to get clean. I didn't know anyone that ever got clean. I didn't know anything about recovery. You know, it wasn't like I knew about it and chose not to. I had no idea. You know, I went to a meeting in jail, and it started like, that's what started it. You know, I liked it. And whatever the feeling was, I wanted more of it. You know, and I can identify with that. I like feeling good. I like doing things that make me feel good. And, you know, people, when I was early in recovery, people had said, like, do it till it hurts, you know? And I didn't understand that until it started hurting. I've had a lot of things that shouldn't hurt. Yeah, I mean, I've never been asked by the press, been on the radio, and I'm not famous and never been in films. But one way I was taught that I can apply this is like if I'm wearing an NA t-shirt or I got an NA bumper sticker, you know, not going around acting like a butthead, you know, basically, you know, because believe it or not, even though I didn't know about NA, there's a lot of people that aren't in this program that know about this program, whether it be special workers, people that work at treatment centers, facilities, homeless shelters, you know, I've taken H&I meeting in and to this detox, and I went in there and I saw someone that worked there that I had known from what I do for work, you know, and never would have known. They didn't know that I was an addict, and I didn't know that they worked at a detox. And basically it just tells me that when I'm in here, I can joke and whatever, we can joke around because we're in recovery, but when I go out there, I need to act a little bit different. Because, like they say, you know, I might be the only basic text that someone ever sees. And again, like the incident with the gentleman that worked at the hotel, like, I just wouldn't want that, you know? I wouldn't want my actions to possibly in the future stop the message to be, you know, from being able to be carried to somebody. And that's basically it for me on that. You know, the 12th tradition, you know, about anonymity, I thought anonymity just meant, you know, no name or no last names. And to me, it means a lot more than that, you know. One of the best things about this, when I found it, it's one of my personal favorites in the green and gold, is the anonymity spoken of in our 12th tradition means that finally we have suffered so long from the isolating disease of addiction belong. And when I read it, it really hit me, because that's why I kept coming back in the beginning. You know, I still wanted to use. I didn't think my behavior was all that bad. And it was horrible, but I didn't think it was that bad. And something about sitting in a meeting just felt good. You know, and that's what it was. It was that sense of equality, that people actually wanted me to come back. You know, that's the sense of belonging that it talked about. And I had no idea that that had anything to do with anonymity. You know, that nobody's better than anybody else. And that, more importantly, you know, that I'm not less than everybody else. You know, it's easy for me to accept you for who you are. It's hard for me to accept me for who I am. You know, so when I do, like early on, I would get little bits and pieces throughout recovery that I was okay. You know, that I was a decent person, that I'm worth it. You know, I was suicidal from the age of 13. Never really tried other than insane things that I did and drug use, but it wasn't like an attempt at suicide. Somewhere inside, I did not like who I was, and I didn't want to live. I was sick, and I just wanted it to be over, and I thought that the only way it would ever be any good, like, to just be able to, like people say, lay your hat, you know, when you come in, that's what I thought I had to do. I thought I had to die for that to happen. And I've found that here, you know. You don't have to die. You can actually just start living. And that's what I've done, you know. I may not have all the things I thought I wanted when I was here. When I was new, people say, oh, you know, just stay clean, keep coming back, you know, work the steps or you'll die, and you'll have a life beyond your wildest dreams. I'm just thinking, like, you have no idea what my dreams are, you know. And it was filled with everything that I don't have now, and it should have had everything that I have now. You know, just being grateful for having a day clean. You know, being able to have real relationships. Like, I've got a better relationship today with my dad than I ever had. And he died before I got clean. You know, I don't know if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm okay with the relationship that we had. You know, I used to believe that these things happened to me and that I was a victim. In reality, he did the best that he could. You know? And I can accept that today. And the freedom from that, just that piece alone, the issues that I had with my dad, that's worth it. And that's, you know, like my sponsor would say, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know? It's the little bit that you see that, you know, and all the stuff that I don't see. That awaits me, you know. And last thing I'll say is that the 12th tradition, in reading it in the green and gold, every single tradition is in here throughout it. You know, there's little lines, and I marked them all, but I don't need to read them all. I mean, it's just, it's in there. And practicing the 12th tradition to me is trying to incorporate all the traditions and all the principles. You know, it's, well, it's simple. It's extremely simple. It's hard to practice, but if it was easy, everybody would be in here. Everybody would be clean, living life in recovery. If anyone's new, it sucks. The beginning sucks, but it's worth it. Even if you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, just keep walking. And my experience is, suddenly you'll see it, and you'll realize that it was worth it. And then you won't want to go back. Thanks.